Welcome to the Terror Dome, baby.
We swarm.
Welcome to the Terror Dome.
We swarm. Let them know.
We swarm, baby.
We swarm, baby. All day long.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of Tales from the Terror Dome. I know it's been a minute, but, you know, really wasn't a lot. There was a lot going on, but there wasn't a lot going on. So let's have story time with Dan real quick. Let's just kind of catch up on things. And I'm going to use some references because I saw Wicked recently, so we're just going to roll with the theme. you know, there was a tornado of a 2024 season that ultimately ended in disaster. Well, not disaster. We underachieved. We did win the bowl game, but before that, like, the tornado picked up the house, that the hokey house, not the bar, but just
the
hokey house.
Hokey house.
Yeah, and it had to land on somebody, man, and that particular person just happened to be defensive coordinator Chris Marv. Chris Marv gets fired. Now we're on a journey, a yellow brick road journey. Where are we going? All the Hokie Nation, we friends. Where are we going? Along the way, we have some couple stops. You know, Matt Moore, offensive line coach from WVU, he signs on. Now we're getting squatted up, boy. And then we go a little further. And Jarrett Ferguson, guy, mainstay, Virginia Tech, Gentry disciple. You know, Pry hires him to be a strength and conditioning coach. Director of strength and conditioning, I'm sorry. So then, the journey continues, man, down this road. This orange and maroon brick road of the Hokieverse. And it's all leading to the palace where the wizard is. And the palace is Merriman. And we get there, and we pop, pop, pop. We cop knock on that door because we want to know who's inside. Who is going to be the defensive coordinator at Virginia Tech? Well, the door opens. You know, we don't know what we're going to find. And out comes Sam Siefkas out of left field. No idea. He is the so-called wizard, a.k.a. defensive coordinator. And a lot of people were like, what the hell? Who is this guy? A lot of instant reaction. Tally had a good space. People mad. Me being like, what took so damn long? Da da da, you know? But enough of that, man. Here to talk about it is my boy Brian Siegel from Boundary Corner and my guy Colby Crawford, the young stud over at 247. But brothers, how y'all living?
Man, you waxed poetic with that metaphor there. I really appreciate that. And speaking of a higher here and using metaphors, this wasn't just a horse of another color. This was a clear horse we didn't even fucking see coming.
Right?
Yeah.
Colby, you didn't even see it coming.
This one came a little bit out of left field, no doubt. But circling back to that space the other night, I knew things were probably going a little nuclear. I was in class, and I tapped in there for just about maybe 2 minutes, and I was in and out. But I was like, wow. Getting a little contentious, people getting after it in there. So definitely mixed reviews, as it will be with a hire, unless I think there's really only one certain coordinator that's been talked about that was coaching a championship game that maybe would have got 100% positive reviews from everyone. But we're here now, and yeah, let's talk about it.
Yeah, man, like along that journey, dude, there was several, like we had the two hires, and then we got all the portal additions. And then like people were like, damn, we're really not hearing any names. Like, there were no names being told. And then it was like, you know, my dumbass thought I was onto something when I was looking at Twitter followers, and I was like, yo, all these people follow Anthony Poindexter, but, like, they would follow him because he probably recruited him, but Jamari Priester follows him, and I can't see how he would have ever tried to recruit him from Hampton. So, like, that's our guy. And then that's what I was stuck on for a little bit. And then it was kind of like, it wasn't Dex. And then like the past couple of days, like Texas A&M got a hold of it. And we thought when we walked through that door to see the wizard that Jay Bateman was going to be strolling out from behind the animatronic big ass head, you know, but it wasn't Jay Bateman. It was, and in much like Virginia Tech fashion, especially, you know, even with the Coach Pry hire from Witt, it wasn't a name we thought Like, it wasn't even being talked about. Like, it literally came from, did the Will Smith Fresh Prince slide across the kitchen floor? Like, hey, I'm here. You know, like, it was like, who?
Exactly. That's what I was about to say. Like, not for better or for worse, but it's a situation where just people weren't as familiar with the name when it comes up. And then you do a little bit of research and some experience. You know, I saw Doug and some other people on Twitter today joking. Still doesn't have a Wikipedia page, so that causes a lot of panic when it's like, okay, they have no coaching resume. But, I mean, you look at Sam, he's a guy who has – coordinator experience, obviously at the lower level, Southern Conference. Talked to Coach Pryor today in the press conference, and he obviously still has a soft spot for the Southern Conference and all that comes from that. And then a young guy like some of these other guys, you see Sean McVay, Cliff Kingsbury, you think of these young guys who sort of ramp their way up through college ranks and into the pros and quickly ascending. I think he's 32, somewhere in that 32, 33, 31, young guy who's already worked his way up to being a linebackers coach at the Arizona Cardinals. I mean, you saw the resounding compliments from Kevin O'Connell, John McGann, which, I mean, you would sort of anticipate, but to be spoken so highly of in that division and to be retained by two NFL staffs, I think is a pretty good approval and sign of confidence in him.
Yeah, Colby, I need you to remember the things you just said. 30s and young. Because yep. 30s are young, all right? The 30s are young.
Some might say 40 is young. Some might say, I just went over the cliff, man. I got to stay young somehow. I saw this thing come out and my immediate first reaction was, I can't believe it took this long to hire somebody that wasn't talked about throughout the entire process. And I think that's probably where a lot of people kind of went sideways in their reaction, is that ultimately we landed on somebody that we didn't really talk about throughout this whole process. Now, I think a lot of the fan base, so you're talking to different people, I think at least a majority of the fan base was going to be okay with somebody like Dex, right? But if we look at the actual experience of calling plays, owning a defense, the experience level is not really that different, you know, despite the age difference and despite, you know, the stops along the way. The only thing that you could say about Dex relative to Sam is that obviously more experience recruiting in the footprint, but it sounds like Sam's not going to necessarily be this huge recruiting force based on what Pry was talking about. And then also proximity to these big blue blood or borderline blue blood power four teams, right? So that's really the only two things that Dex would have. But in terms of actually play calling experience, you know, and sign off from, you know, these major coaches, I mean, that's a big deal. And looking at his philosophy and kind of what we've done in the transfer portal this offseason, a lot of that makes sense. And I know, you know, Colby, you talked about it a little bit during, you know, during the press, or we heard Pry kind of emphasize that throughout the press conference today, that, you know, he's kind of been thinking about this for a year or two, started leaning that way in terms of actual personnel, a little bit at the end of last cycle, but really hardcore, you know, wrapping up, you know, this cycle and what we saw adding on in the portal there. I'm excited about the scheme and to talk X's and O's, because I mean, there's nothing better than speculating on what we're going to see from a scheme standpoint, especially a guy that does something not significantly different than the other guy, but there are a lot more nuances and a lot more fun things, I think, to talk about this defense, you know, relative to kind of that 4-3 that we've been looking at for the last 3 years.
Oh yeah, 1,000%. That was like where I was. I was like, why the hell did it take? My whole thing, initial reaction was, why did it take 7 weeks to hire this dude? Like you said, we didn't even hear about this guy. Like Jim Knowles, I understand. Like, and Pryor kind of cleared that up today in the press conference when he was like, you know, like we put in so much work talking to Jim. That, well, he didn't say Jim, but you know, that we, and if you know, like we know at this point,
reading
right?
Between the lines,
yeah. So, like, it was like, because it wasn't Al Golden, he went to the Bengals. So, like, he said, we had a guy playing in the championship game, we put a lot of hours in talking to this guy, interviewing this guy. I was gonna see it through, I wasn't just gonna bail on it. And then at that point, Penn State. Tom Allen leaves, James Franklin throws $3.3 million per year, for him to come basically home, because I think Jim Knowles is from Philly, so we don't get him. And then there were a couple other misses. I'm thankful that Pry swung for the fences, and it sounds like people really tried to, like, convince Pry, like, hey, Sam Cefkus is the guy you need. And he was like, I even had to, like, end conversations because people just kept wanting to talk about him, which I think is a good thing if people – like, it takes a lot of effort to go out of your way to go to bat for somebody. Like, you don't have to. You're already in the NFL. Like, what do you care? You know what I'm saying? Like, so I get it. And, I really dove in to this guy. Like, I listened to that – did you guys listen to that podcast that he did back in 2020?
Yeah,
with Coach G or whatever from – he was at Baldwin Wallace at one point. Shout out Alex Jones, his alma mater.
Shout out.
Not the InfoWars one, by the way, Virginia Tech. But no, like, just like listening to the things, like, I want our players to have third down principles on first down, like things like that. Just like there was a whole bunch of stuff that he was talking about, like, you know, he was like 4-3 principles and the 3-4, like all this other, like, all these different looks and sets. And like, this dude is just a straight up football nerd. Like, he just, like, sits in his room and obsesses over how he's going to beat the offense.
One thing that kept coming up, and like even the verbiage that was said a couple times, was the word, like, intense. Echoed it again today. And Doug Bowman actually did some good research sort of parsing through the internet, trying to find things on him. And there was one article where I think it was at Wofford where he sort of ended up breaking through and getting that job, was he kept sending handwritten letters to them saying, hey, like, I'm interested in coaching. I'm interested. And then one day he just showed up to the office and said he had a meeting, even though he didn't have a meeting. And that was sort of how he ended up in that Wofford job. So relentless, intense. It definitely seems that way. A guy who also I thought it was interesting. You talk about the Jay Batemans, the Dax, obviously ace recruiters, guys who have a whole litany of connections in recruiting. This is a guy who he's not going to be a position coach. And with the way that college football is sort of changing, coordinator doesn't really have to be on the road. You just have to have 10 coaches on the road. Let's say you let him coordinate the defense. You put your 10 best guys to go out there into high schools with the most relationships, go get the guys you want to fit that personnel, which they sort of, I don't say lucked into. Like, I think they were going to slowly mesh into this a little bit with the transfer portal additions, but this is a big jump. This is sort of, okay, we're going to dive headfirst into it now. So I think it really frees them up to add a lot of new things and wrinkles on defense.
Yeah, and I mean, we hear it all the time. People talk about, you know, you don't necessarily need a coordinator that's a big plus recruiter. You need a guy that if your position coaches get them on campus, you can sell them on the vision, you can close the deal. And that's really, I think, plays into his strong suit in this case, because it sounds like he is somebody that is very clear with their vision, clear with what they want to do with the room and how they plan to go about executing. And I think that's the big thing. And another thing to think about, and this is kind of something I saw, you know, reading on Twitter, reading on the boards, all that stuff. You know, there were a bunch of A&M fans that were very happy that Bateman was either taking a backseat from calling plays or going to be fully out the door. Every single bit of feedback I've seen on Sam Cefkus has been positive, whether it's fans, whether it's former coaches. So as far as looking at the folks that are commenting on their experience with him as their coach, it's been nothing but positive. So that's another big takeaway I had. I'm still kind of readjusting my expectations just because they were kind of set a little bit as we kind of went further in the process. I think the process probably had us reevaluating what our expectations for this hire looked like, and then it ended up being almost none of those expectations. So I think that's probably why, you know, we see a lot of some knee jerk on this one. It's a risky hire still for some of the reasons that Colby and Dan you've mentioned so far, mainly because it is a guy that has never called plays at the Power Four level. And it's a guy that is young and up and coming and still has something to prove, which can be a positive and a negative. You know, but I think this is something with the way we have recruited and the talent that we're bringing back is going to be really interesting to watch. And I think it's a hire that, you know, it's not a home run. You didn't give yourself the benefit of the doubt with this hire, but I think it's definitely a wait and see and a show me hire, because I don't think anyone can really feel bad about this hire like we're on a sinking ship or anything.
Right. No, I mean, we were waiting to see anyway, because after this past season, like, we understand, like, things are not necessarily completely copacetic in Blacksburg. You know, like, our team is, I mean, they're at a very big crossroads right now, which I think is why Pry took his time making these hires. And he's bringing this dude in that's obsessed with football, and Pry, similar path. He called Brian Steinspring every day for a job at Virginia Tech. He called Billy Height every day for a job, and then finally he got one as a GA. But, like, I've never been a coach. You know, I never have. So, like, I'm not going to speak on that from a knowledgeable standpoint. But I did play forever, obviously not in college or anything. But, like, and I have made my life, like, I'm obsessed with sports. So, like, I would think he did it very high level as far as calling a defense at Wofford. You know, they were number one twice. And then he was at Platteville before that. They were number one there. And then you got John Gannon saying, hey, I was going to make this dude my DC if our DC left for a job, because they were a bunch of his staff interviewed this past cycle.
Yeah.
So, like, I think if you don't necessarily have called it a P5, but you can get your players to buy into your scheme that are P5 players, I think it would translate. That's just my opinion.
I think the thing that calms that, or some of the notions just I've heard, I mean, it's been so fresh. Yesterday it comes out. But, I mean, a lot of it is to run that scheme, coaching in the NFL, you know, those are – there's how many percent that make you to play college football, there's how many percent make you to play Power 4 football, and then how many percent of that go play in the NFL. The athletes you're coaching in the NFL, they know how to tackle. They know – it's – I mean, that's what college is, development, developing the fundamentals. And this is a – I mean, it just is. It's a more complex scheme that you really have to be athletic and be able – so it's – that's where some people are having pause saying, do we have – or does Virginia Tech have the athlete, have the necessary personnel to be able to run this defense effectively? And the one thing that sort of offsets that in my brain is, well, he led the Southern Conference with FCS level players at Wofford. So if he can teach and install there, I mean, they weren't recruiting at a much higher clip than Furman or other competitive universities. If you can still teach and install it at that level, ideally it'll scale. Now, I mean, I know Arizona, I think, went from 4 to 9 wins. How much is that tied to defensive integrity? We won't know. And that's why I think it's wait and see, because you can draw things in spring camp. I mean, whatever. Spring ball, we'll be able to see some things. Fall camp, we'll get a clear picture. But you really don't really know until you go down to South Carolina, Vanderbilt. You get a couple games under your belt and see how that defense starts to unfold. So you want to be knee-jerk one way or the other. But you really – it's tough because you don't want to be like, well, we have to wait and see. Because then you can make a decision, and obviously it'll be easier. But it's just so new. I mean, you think about the defense from a year ago. You had Marv coming into year three. You had however many starters coming back this year, completely new look defense, completely new look defensive scheme, defensive coordinator, potentially more new defensive staff coming in. So it's going to be completely different. And hopefully we'll get a clearer picture as we go through spring game. But I think fall is really going to be a big determiner, like, how this defense operates.
Yeah. And one of the quotes that I kind of took away from watching some of the podcasts and some of the videos that I've seen about Siepkes and what they were doing, you know, one of the things that he talked about was, if we're in game prep week, we're in game prep mode, and you're asking me scheme questions instead of opponent questions, I've done my job wrong. And emphasized taking those complex elements of a defense and simplifying them so that they can still play fast, play hungry, and not be out on the field thinking. And I think that's a big emphasis. And I'm hoping that comes to fruition from Virginia Tech's perspective. And obviously, Colby, you made a good point with, you know, successful Southern Conference defense there at Wofford. So, you know, able to scale it up and down based on talent level. Shown that so far. Let's see how that works at Virginia Tech.
Yeah. Plus, another thing that stood out to me, I was listening to his pod interview or whatever. He said that he had, like, he takes all the plays of the opponent and he breaks them down into three tiers. The A tier, they spam the hell out of in practice till they're blue in the face. Like, they know those, like, the back of their hand. He's like, then they do the B tier where they practice them half as much. And then there's the C tier of plays they hardly ever run that they'll go through, like, during the install on, like, a Friday, like, or the walkthrough on, like, a Friday. So he really stressed. And then he was talking, like, you know, basically, like, with the way spring ball works for me is we just focus on what the offense is running or something like that. So therefore, it's not necessarily totally based on, like, I don't know. It was weird. It was the way he was breaking it down. It was like very complex stuff. Like, he was like, had it down to a science where he was like, you know, basically all the base stuff they'll have done in spring ball. So like, it'll just be inherent versus focusing completely on the other team's scheme all the time. You know what I'm saying? Or something like that. It was crazy.
I mean, those 15 practices are always big in spring, especially big when, I mean, it's January 28th, kid, what, now a week and a half through school, transfers a week and a half in a new place, and most, if not all of them, are not familiarized with their defense coordinator. So you got upcoming winter workouts, and once you hit the ground running with those 15 practices, it's big. So I didn't hear that part of the podcast. I only listened to parts of it, but I mean, that's going to be big to install that because you only have it so many days. Once you hit summer, the coaches are so hands off, and you pick back up with practices before fall, and then you're playing on Sunday against Lars Sellers and Dylan Stewart and all those guys. So it's going to go quickly here. And I mean, that's sort of the other thing. I mean, it didn't hurt them in the portal. I mean, I think they still signed a very effective class to what they needed. So now it's how quickly can he go in there, familiarize himself with not only the personnel, players, and sort of hit the ground running there.
Yeah, I think that's going to be important. And, you know, looking at the scheme, I'm really interested to see how we implement. You know, it sounds like we're going to be some level of, you know, three safety structure, you know, multiple fronts more than likely. So I'm excited to see how that gets implemented, you know, what the scheme fits are. You know, when I coached briefly, that was a variation of what I coached. So I'm somewhat familiar with it. So it's going to be interesting to see how that gets implemented. So I'm looking forward to seeing more on that front for sure.
Now, yeah, have either of you guys fired up NCAA in the past couple of days and started mixing it up to get a look? Or
no, not yet.
I haven't yet. No.
I think Cheetah ran some three high at Texas Tech as well, so he's familiar, and he's gonna have, I mean, the DBs are gonna be a massive part of this thing, so he's gonna have his hands full, and I think he's gonna have some fun with it. And it's kind of like weird how things just kind of aligned without having a defensive coordinator, but now this guy's coming in and he wants to run all this stuff, like using a jackbacker, and then all of a sudden we just happen to get the dude from Eastern Michigan in the portal who could be that guy because they were gonna use him in an edge sort of role, but he also played, he was a really good middle linebacker at Eastern Michigan. And then you bring in Caleb Spencer last year who can play big nickel. So like, you already have players on the team that will fit the scheme, and you don't have to, like, it just happened before he even got here. So I think that's just crazy how it definitely shows Pry's intent on wanting to do the stuff before, even regardless of who the hire was.
Yeah, and it sounds like he was moving towards either, you know, some form of the 4-2 or kind of this 3-3 multiple, three high safety look. So I'm excited because it's going to give us a lot more versatility, especially, you know, looking at the teams we play. You see a lot of air raid, you see a lot of, you know, heavy spread. So I think this is going to let us match up a little bit better. A lot of RPO that we struggled at times to defend throughout the year last year. I mean, we got burnt how many times on that damn tight end RPO in one damn game. So yeah, I think these type of personnel shifts are going to give us a lot more favorable matchups while still not necessarily putting us behind the eight ball when it comes to stopping the run. Cause it's going to allow some of those alley safeties to make some big time plays while still having a safety net behind them.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just sort of talking out loud here, thinking about it. I think there are a lot of interesting combinations you can think of. And like Brian was talking about, it showed Pry was going this way anyway. I think this just definitely sent him more over the edge. When anytime anyone says Jack Becker, I'm always cautious because that's where APR was playing down at Florida. And, you know, he was playing decent ball down there, but he didn't lead the league in sacks and second in the nation in sacks. But, I mean, that's just maybe the type of player he was. And you even saw him standing up at certain times of what Coach Price was running last year and moving all over, moving inside, outside. Deonkum, I think Hull fit well there. Jordan Bass, depending on how he gets healthy and deals with some other things, seeing how he could fit potentially Caleb Spencer. Like, it really is interesting sort of thinking through. I mean, one thing, people like to make the narrative Virginia Tech recruits more undersized nose tackles, some guys who maybe aren't as – if you do run those offsets, maybe finding a real run stopper. I know Jazari Priester, big guy. I saw him in person, like 6'5", probably massive. 300 pounds. Yeah, I mean, that's a guy, but I mean – he's still really raw, you know, 3 years of eligibility, only one season at Hampton University. So still hasn't seen a lot of action, but I mean, that's a guy who has that build that can be that true nose tackle if you run that three man front up front. But yeah, I mean, the spring portal is going to show a lot. And I think that'll, outside of spring ball, which is going to give us a really clear picture, what he attacks in the next portal window is really, I think, going to open up some more eyes about the defense too for the fall.
Yeah, I think Gerard Johnson is going to flourish in this type of defense as well. And then Asen Stevens on the – I think I have high hopes for him, whatever they do with him. Isaiah Cash, I loved his film already, so it'll be – I mean, we got all these safeties now. We're going to be able to utilize them. Most of them are versatile. That's the type of DB they like.
Yep.
So it's going to be – I mean, yeah, there's just so many possibilities. Like, I was watching – film breakdown on Arizona and how Buda Baker just crashes down from that box safety position. Like, is there's so much stuff that they're going to be able to do now. And I thought Pry harped on, he said, he was like, we were not good in situational football this year, and this is going to help us tremendously. And I was like, good.
Also, I'm going to handicap it a little bit. Buda Baker's, if not one of the best safeties in the national football.
No, 1,000%.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Buda's amazing. But, like, just the fact, like, I'm not comparing anybody to Buda, but, like, just, like, knowing, like, we're going to probably see a lot of that box safety crashing down. Like,
yeah. Well, also, you see a system that lets somebody with a Buda Baker skill set flourish. And I think that's what I'm excited to see, is to see what this safety group that we're bringing in can do. Because, I mean, it's really, truly, I mean, it's a very much an overhauled safety room. I mean, you got really a couple guys of note that played significant snaps last year in that room. Most of these guys are guys that are coming from other systems. Some of them, you know, I thought we were a pretty good fit for what we were trying to do. Some of them had that kind of tweener aspect to them. So I think that kind of played into, you know, kind of this philosophy shift on the defensive side of the football. And we can definitely see it up front. I mean, you guys already talked about, you know, a couple guys there. So, I mean, I think Ben Bell plays into this, this role as well. You know, looking inside, I think, you know, Colby brings up a good point. You know, if you're doing got that odd front, you're looking for a zero or a shade, and, you know, we don't really have really big guys in our defensive tackle room right now. I think we've got some strong guys that can hold some ground, but I don't know if we necessarily have the space eaters, the block eaters that you typically would want from that. So right. I'm interested to see how they're going to deploy the defensive line, whether it's going to be, you know, still some one gap to let them just take advantage of their athleticism and strength, or whether there's going to be kind of that two gap nose that you see a lot. And I don't know if we quite have that on our roster right now, or if that's going to be a work in progress.
Do you think we move Caleb Woodson to Mike now?
Yeah.
I thought we were anyway. Like, I kind of felt like it could happen. Like, him, Bass, and Spencer would have been a good set, but, like, the way, like, a lot of this tape I've seen of with the defense at Arizona and them have ran, like, that middle linebacker is going to have to be, like, I feel like super, obviously super athletic. They were in the NFL, but like, I don't know. I feel like he would be good there.
Good thing Steve Kiss was the linebackers coach of that defense. So I think he's got a pretty good idea of what he's looking at. And, you know, you talk about it. I mean, that's the center where it all starts, is that middle linebacker and specifically that defense. And I mean, you look the last couple seasons, you can point to some things, and safeties probably in 2022 and some certain run fit. Well, 2023, that led to some big plays and some poor gap integrity, but especially from the linebacker play, has left a lot to be desired, and honestly the entire Pride tenure. So I think he'll have his mold. Obviously Woodson's cross-trained a bunch, and I think the jump to Mike wouldn't surprise anyone, but we'll see. You keep bouncing around, that'd be his third linebacker position in 3 years, so you know, you'll see. I think that's probably probable, but well, I trust Steve Kiss, especially bringing in a linebacker guy. I mean, obviously, Marv coached linebackers, Coach Pry coached linebackers, but just getting another set of eyes specifically on that group where, I mean, they're the green dot. They call the defense. Getting that squared away sort of make sure everything else is in order. So that's big time to get that locked up.
Let me ask this, fellas. I know we probably talked about we're not quite done maybe on this side of the ball. Where do we see some of these additional staff moves taking place?
That's a good question. I mean, the big rumored one has always been bringing in another D line coach to pair with JC. I don't know what they do there. I guess it depends. What is Pearson staying in the safety room? Is he moving to a different, like, we don't, again, I think it just depends. Are they going to hire an external, because they already said that he's not going to coach a specific position. He's going to walk around practice and have hands in every room. So it'll be, I guess there's like potentially three position coach spots or half a, I don't know. I don't know how he's going to do it, but I could see like maybe three hires and then obviously support staff. He said he might bring in another quality control guy. They're not sure yet, but Colby, I mean, I don't know what you're hearing or what you can tell us.
I mean, definitely going to be some shuffling here in the next couple of days. I think it'll be good for him and prior to locking in, obviously, with recruiting and that turning into the period where they can't go in high schools. I think that'll be good for them to sort of lock in and get that squared away, because you don't want that to drag on too long, especially before spring ball, as things have already sort of gone longer and longer. The Cody line, a lot of smoke around that. Names are swirling, but who knows? A lot of names are swirling, and they fell through with this search. So, wouldn't believe it till that any ink is signed there. You talk about other coaches. I mean, there's a lot of staff positions that are going to look a lot different, and I think one thing is just the overarching NFL model that they're trying to absorb. College football is going that way. I think top down, they're going to try and make this whole deal look a lot more like a NFL front office than a typical Power Four program 5-10 years ago. So there's going to be a lot of shuffling, and you know, him not being on the road, I think, is very likely. So that changes things with position coaches, and things get messy when you move those salaries around and things being on and off the field.
Yep.
But there's definitely going to be some movement. Obviously, he doesn't have a very developed coaching tree with what he's done, so there's not a lot of other connections as some other people who've been in the industry a little bit longer. But, I mean, we'll see who he brings in, who Pryor brings in. And, I mean, it's going to be the meeting of the minds. Like, it's going to be Sifkis' defense, but I think Pry's going to help him sort of form out this staff here early on.
Colby, I got a question for you. Oh, my bad. Go ahead.
No, you're good. Go ahead. I'll come back on the end there.
I was going to say, this whole process, like, you and Evan, and you guys were on like a scoop board. So like, and nobody was talking. So like, what has this whole thing been like for y'all trying to give the content to the people that subscribe versus, and maybe it's not there versus what you're able to say? Like, what was that whole process like for y'all?
I mean, it was tight. Like, don't get me wrong, Dave. I mean, it was between the meeting of the minds of Hazel, Bry, Witt. I mean, it really didn't leave that circle. I mean, they brought in other people, but outside of them, and usually, you know, with these types of searches, agents talk and things leak. But I mean, until right up until about the time Thamel did his thing, like, I mean, it was pretty locked in between those three. So, I mean, I think it's admirable that obviously Bateman and names like that come out, Dex and things, you can sort of draw conclusions. There were a lot of names brought up that were never even in the mix. So, but I mean, I think in this day and age, like you said, tracking Twitter followers, tracking everything, tracking flights, tracking, I mean, anything you can imagine, that they did a really great job of sort of keeping that on the lowdown.
Yeah, and piggybacking on that a little bit, kind of pointing to, what may still be coming down the road. Looking at defensive line, I'm interested with the Jack backer, if that's something that you bring in a John Scott Jr. I mean, I know that name's been floated out there. Big connection with Pry. I don't know if he's necessarily working with JC or if he's kind of going to be a Jack backer, outside linebacker. He has worked with outside linebackers in the past. If that's going to be his role, if a Quinn's going to kind of slot in and take over the rest of the linebacking unit, since it sounds like Siepkes is going to kind of not really have his own room, and then we'll see what happens at safety, which I really don't have a really good starting point on names to throw out there if that's one of the positions that gets shuffled.
I mean, you think about how prevalent the safety position is going to be in this type of defense. You think about Xavier Debe still being on staff when you bring up linebackers. Like, there's a lot of things that are going to pan out. And honestly, right now, I wish I had more to say, but it's just sort of waiting and seeing. Like, Coach Debe's been on the road these last couple, well, I mean, shoot, now last couple weeks. You want him on the road? Do you go internal? Do you go external? Just sort of weighing. Like, I mean, people, there's obviously a lot of very positive feedback for them internally hiring Jarrett Ferguson from current players, former players, different people. But then you think about the notion if they did an internal hire for DC or certain things. It's like the perception of, do you go external again? And let's say it takes 4 weeks or whatever number, then people, and it's not about perception. You want to make the best hire. And if that's what it is, then that's what it is, internal or external. But I think there's going to be a lot of, and I keep going back to honestly the safety and linebacker position, because obviously both of those are kind of in limbo right now between those.
Yeah, no, I mean, you at least have JC, who's proven to be able to close like high level talent from the portal and things like that. So like the defensive line has performed well. You still have, Copeland and Gilliam and all the young kids that played well. Laws, I don't know where he's a smaller guy. I don't know where he'll fit. And this new defense, I don't think they'll move him to the outside. Like he's a menace. Like he performed well in the bowl game. So yeah, I really feel like the linebacker position coach and the safety position coach, like those are big holes to fill. And I would feel linebacker might be more dire right now because you still at very least, if Pearson's transitioned or what, I don't know, whatever's happening there, like he is still there. So like at the like. The very least, he's still there's consistency because he's been there the whole time. So it's not like they're talking to somebody new,
Agreed.
Yeah, I'm with that. It's going to be interesting to see how that shakes out. I don't know if Pearson is the guy that wants to see this through from a long-term perspective, as far as being on the field, on the road, all of those things, or whether he is more comfortable just being in Blacksburg. And I think some of that is playing a role as well. Also looking forward of, all right, so you've got this new safety emphasized scheme that you're looking to implement. Is he a good fit for that? Has he been exposed to that in a way where you feel comfortable with him taking a, keeping control of that room as things move forward? Obviously, you were comfortable with enough with him to bring these guys in during that transition period without a defensive coordinator, just with a vision of what you thought this was going to look like. And now you've got that puzzle piece in place. And how does that kind of change the idea there? And does Sam have some definitive ideas of a guy he'd like to bring in for that position that may not be Pearson, right? So I guess that's the other the other piece of the puzzle, and being a linebacker coach, maybe even that position. So I think there's probably going to be at least some degree of an evaluation on that as well.
I think you just got to ensure your 10 best recruiters are on the road. That's what it comes down to at the end of the day. Now just make sure your 10 best guys are out there on the
road. Agreed. Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, I think the staff has shown a propensity to be able to get guys that can recruit well, that do a really good job with relationship building. So even if you don't get a guy on the first go round, we've seen, you know, many times so far in Pry's tenure, the first time guys hit the transfer portal within the footprint, your Virginia Tech's getting a very big look, if not a, you know, being the team that pulls them in. So I like the moves that we've made so far. I'm hoping that the next couple, kind of put the bigger picture into play, so we can see what this, you know, looks like once spring ball ramps up.
Nah, man, I agree. It's a pivotal point in Virginia Tech. It's exciting, but it's also very scary and a lot of unknown, which could be, like I said, it could be great. It could be awful. I don't know if it'll be in between, but that's why we do this. We hop on here once a week or once every couple weeks, and we give our thoughts, either educated opinions or we don't know shit, you know.
we're high upside, low floor, you know.
Yeah.
That's where we hang out.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we went from you know, being dark horse playoff contenders to now, you know, you got a head coach that's, you know, according to some outlets, very much on the hot seat. So I think this is going to be a very pivotal year. I don't think this is a make or break year necessarily, but I think it's definitely a year that tells us how much further we're going to have in the Pry regime, for what it's worth.
I would agree with that. For what it's worth, he did seem very excited, like just naturally excited in his presser today. He seemed to have like really good spirits about him. And I think that was a lot different from what we saw towards the end of the season. I think there was some, you know, relief and disappointment all at the same time at the end of the season. But now he does seem to be rejuvenated a bit. And I'm wondering, like, him being such a defensive guy and, like, all the conversations and, like, what we know about Sifkis so far being all about the intricacies and the ins and outs and the chess matches of defenses and all these, like, different things, if that, like, really has him just – a new person.
Yeah. And I think it was a long process. So I think some of that was like just relief that this process was over because I mean, as frustrated as the fan base got during those 7 weeks, I'm sure, you know, it wasn't an easy process for them to make sure that they're doing their due diligence in hearing from everyone and, you know, making sure that you get those in-person interviews with Knowles as things wrap up on his end and asking all the questions and getting all the input from folks that aren't necessarily interviewing, but they're kind of outside the process, right? They're guys that you're getting that external feedback from and vetting those sources as much as you can. So it's a frustrating process that I think, you know, it's nice for it to come to an end. And I think, you know, I know we've talked about it, Dan. We wanted a coach 3 weeks ago. It took another 3 weeks. Here we are. We made it. We got one. It wasn't the one we thought, but I think it's the one that we can ride with.
So now it's just get to work, reinvigorated, you know, whatever the spirit was. What a day. I mean, today was at the press conference literally hours before he was in Virginia Beach, Virginia. And they stopped by like, he was like hopped on a flight for the press conference. Like he was recruiting the 757 hard today. So he was all over it. Shoot, Sifkis was on the road today doing in-home visits. Like he was out recruiting on the first day. So, I mean, they got a lot going on, but obviously I think a lot of that excitement was just relief because obviously he's excited about the guy he got and then he's excited it's done so they can just sort of be set sail and good, bad, or indifferent. Now it's just what you got and you got to go for it.
Yeah, Colby, who was the kid that Sifkis was visiting today to convince him to do an official?
Zahir Mathis, Maryland guy, former Ohio State commit, top 247 kid up in Maryland. So he was going in-home with Zahir Mathis. Obviously, I think he's got his Maryland official. So, decently heavy Maryland lean. 2025 guy. Obviously, Virginia Tech just made their last 2025 commitment from Cam Sparks in the All-American Bowl a couple weeks back. So, you thought that class was done, but I mean, if you add a guy like that, you can't say no. I'd say the Hokies are definitely on the outside looking in. Definitely on the outside looking in, but good nonetheless to sort of no better way to get your feet wet than go talk to a very, very highly touted recruit on your first day wearing a VT logo.
Yeah, I mean, you get him to take an official. That's a good first at bat for the Hokie fan base. Yeah.
Yeah, and a
Yeah.
lot of times, you know, getting them in the door that can change things for them. So that's a really big first step. So excited to see what happens with that, even though he is a pretty heavy Maryland lean at this point.
But yeah, I would agree with that. It's gonna be interesting because like Pry has never. Like just looking ahead, the noise will never be louder for him than it will be going into that South Carolina game because of who's across the sideline, what he means to Virginia Tech. Like it's going to be interesting to see how they keep the kids focused and keep that it like all that noise like drowned out to a minimum.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at Shane across the aisle there, I think a lot of Hokie fans are like looking at what could have been. Some people saying what should have been, you know, whatever. I think we can relitigate that all we want to.
Oh, yeah.
I think at this point it's all about, from Pry's perspective, that game you want to win. It doesn't have to be a win, but it can't be a blowout. You can't go out there
Right.
and get fucking waxed.
Correct.
I mean, Shane's going to have a strong message for the Gamecocks leading into that week. You can be sure of that. I mean, they know what Virginia Tech means to him, his family. So that'll be something, but that's eons away. Team's going to look completely different.
Yeah.
Live in the off-season hopium right now.
It's gonna be, I don't know, it's gonna be difficult, I think, to get the fans smoking the hopium this time, but maybe that's good. Like, you know what? Let's just get learn the new schemes, like get comfortable with everything, get bigger, get faster with Ferg. Lock in, dude. You know? Just stay locked in. And I know Dante in the most polite way possible had alluded to maybe there were issues with kids this year not locking in like they should have been and letting the outside noise kind of gas them up a little too much and not performing the way it led to not performing the way they should have. But it'll be, yeah, I figure like Colby said earlier, with the new guy coming in, there's going to be scheme fit. See during the spring practices who really fits that, who should probably find another place, who they're going to bring in the spring portal. Like it's a pivotal several months for the Virginia Tech Hokies.
Yeah, and I mean, I think, you know, to your point there, Dan, I think this fan base has been thirsty for a while, and I think we saw a little bit of opportunity there in the off season last year, and we really latched onto it to a point where we probably latched onto it a little too much. You know, you see a lot of guys returning, you see a very good upward trajectory from the end of the previous season. You know, you start put you know, 1 and 1 equal, you know, 4 in this case, and it wasn't quite there. It was more like, you know, 1.5. Between injuries and between everything else, it just wasn't the season that we hoped for. Definitely an underachieving season. But I think definitely we attached probably a little more to that team than they may have deserved, or that was fair to attach to them. And unfortunately, it sounds like, to your point, some of them kind of bought into that as well, which, you know, Pratt talked about it. You know, you haven't done shit yet. I mean, you said it on multiple podcasts
Yeah.
last
You
year.
ain't done shit.
Exactly. So, I mean, I don't think that mindset necessarily, you know, hit everybody. And sometimes you can't smell what you're shoveling. You gotta go out there and just handle your business and not worry about that outside noise.
Yeah, I think the new uniforms in CFB 25, everybody using us kind of probably it definitely magnified. Yeah, Pat McAfee picking us to win the ACC on College Game Day, week 0. from Ireland. Like, it was just a lot.
Little too much smoke, a little too much smoke.
Yeah.
And I mean, we bought into it, and I get why we did. Again, we were thirsty, man. This fan base is
Oh,
thirsty.
we were. Gentlemen, we can't dive. Well, obviously, there's more pieces to be put into the puzzle, but the big one has been placed. So if you've ever done a jigsaw puzzle, you know when that one piece you couldn't find, you finally put it in, the rest follow shortly. So we'll see how the staff fills out. It'll be more to talk about. It's great for us content creators and for Colby, who does his thing over. He's the Steve Kornacki dude of VT Scoop, man. He's working them boards with that database, and yeah, man. We'll see where it goes. There'll obviously be more to talk about in the coming weeks, and then obviously it'll culminate with a lot of maybe Brian chugging more rails at Tots for spring game.
Hey,
Who
I've already
knows?
booked. I've already booked my room, man. I'm there. We'll see
It is
about chugging.
Tuesday. It is
Hey.
Tuesday.
Yeah. Kobe, you got any closing remarks? Any further insight on this initial day of hire?
No, I mean, I'm hanging on for the ride, not getting too high or too low. Excited for spring ball. Maybe come back on then, but excited. You can check out more if there's more shuffling at vtscoop.com. All right, that's my quick pitch, but appreciate you guys. It's always good catching up with you guys. Some of the best, so I really appreciate it again.
Yes, sir. And if you sign up for VT Scoop, you get Paramount Plus. Watch
Yes, you do.
Landman, which is amazing, by the way. So,
There we go. Shout out.
yeah, well worth it. Man, I appreciate y'all for coming on here doing this. It was good to talk about, Sam Cefkus, and the hesitant excitement is how I'm going to
Yeah,
put it. Yeah, we're
and
not.
I get two extra episodes now because I get to, do a full-on scheme breakdown at some point, so that's gonna be fun.
This is your Super Bowl.
That's right. That's right. Off-season
And
content is always needed.
yeah, absolutely. And obviously, interviews will come at some point. That's what I do here in the off season of Tales from the Teardome, so stay tuned for that. And
Somebody better.
as always, thank you. As always, go Hokies.
Go Hokies.